of all, over here we have a group called Leadership Morris. If you would raise your hands, and thank you for being here today. And also, I hear it's Farm Bureau is here, Dana Hill. Anyone from Farm Bureau, if you would raise? Very good. Thank you so much for being here. And it's an appropriate day because today we are talking about some agricultural issues. The first thing we're going to do today is listen to an assessment and classification practices report, which comes out every year. And I think it's going to talk about and address some of the big concerns that have been out there regarding ag land this year, in that there has been a real spike in property taxes. And this report is going to talk about why those things are occurring. I think what we're going to see and hear is that there's been kind of a perfect storm of situations that have occurred that have really resulted in agricultural ag land going up and property taxes going up. And so I think today's meeting is going to be very informative. When we are at the conclusion of this report, we'll take some questions from members here, and then we have three bills. One of the bills deals with limited market value, which was phased out this year, one of the reasons why ag land is going up. And then we're going to listen to two bills that deal very specifically with green acres in changing a date from May 1st when people who are in green acres have to decide what to do with their rural vacant land, which is no longer qualified under green acres. And there's plenty of options with that. But anyway, there's a date that is looking to be extended. So that's really the focus of those bills and not anything further as far as looking at the overall Green Acres program. So with that, we do have the Department of Revenue here. If you could come forward, Mr. Folkman and Mr. Hagen, and I know Mr. Ouellette is here, and I see Mr. Nord in the crowd. So we've got the A-team from the Revenue Department here to present the report. So thank you so much for being here. If you would state your name and present your report.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Gordon Folkman. I'm the Director of the Property Tax Division. And thank you for having us here today to give you an update on some of the agricultural and green acre provisions and policy changes we've made over the last year or so. Just for clarification, Mr. Chair, we are presenting report and information that's based on the legislative mandated report that we included in the laws last year that specifically asked us to come to committee to bring you an update on ag value trends, the green acre methodology, and how we're doing on the 2A, 2B classification. I think in the future we certainly want to unfold this information into that assessment practices report, which we do every year for you as well. If that's okay at some point down the road, we do that. What we're going to do today is the legislative requirement for us was to provide information or feedback to the committee looking at the trend in agricultural values for 2A and 2B. Also give you an update on the Green Acres methodology that we use for the Green Acres program, and give you a little bit of an idea how the assessors are doing and progressing with the classification of their properties in the 2A and 2B classes. It's a administrative challenge, and we're working very well. I think we don't have to really complete the classification assignments until 2013 or 14, I believe it is, but we're making some really good progress with the most of the counties on that. We have, though, as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, at the beginning with your opening remarks, that this last tax year, tax increases on many agricultural properties saw some significant increases. And for our presentation today, we've also now incorporated some analysis of those impacts, or the analysis of the factors associated with that. And you're right, one of the things that we've been talking about with groups and with legislators over the last several months, reflecting on the TNT increases that people were seeing, that it was a sort of a perfect storm of a number of factors coming together. And one of the things we'll touch upon in our presentation today is sort of peel the onion and identify some of the factors that came into play. And for the most part, much of the increases that we were seeing were not really directly tied to the legislation changes that were made in 2009 on the Green Acres program. Most of those changes dealt with the classification issues and the eligibility for Green Acres and the Rural Preserve program. The impacts we were seeing this year had to do much more with the underlying market. The green acre value that we use in the green acre program also came into play. But another factor was the relative increase in the agricultural sector compared to commercial, industrial, and residential values, which were declining. And so depending on where you are, you could also see some significant shifts. Mm-hmm. In addition, the limited market value law was phased out for the first time completely this last year. And a number of these properties, ag value is one of those stronger growing properties all for the last several years, and there was a significant amount of captured value that came back on the tax rolls, which compounded the issue even further. So those are kind of the things we'll try and identify during our presentation. And with that, I'll turn it over to John, and we also have... Well, John will kick it off with some overview of the Green Acres policy. We have Andrea Fish from our office to talk about the Green Acre methodology, and Eric Willett will talk about some of the interactions of those factors.
Thank you, Mr. Volkman. Mr. Hagan, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Hagan. I'm Assistant Director with the Property Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. Thank you for having us here today. We're looking forward to the beginning of an annual report on Green Acres, and we think it's going to be a good plan to have this report going forward to identify issues and concerns as we move along. I've been hearing a lot of people kind of pining for the old days before the Green Acres changes in 2008 and 2009, and wanting to go back to the pre-2008 changes. And I think it's kind of natural, I guess, for us always to want to go back to times when we thought it was a simpler time. But I'm not so sure that our memories aren't failing us in some respects. A lot of the problems that precipitated the changes in Green Acres were the result of a lot of anecdotal complaints and a lot of concerns that were expressed to legislators and to the Department of Revenue concerning Green Acres. It seems like probably the all-consuming thing in my career has become Green Acres, the defining point of my career, which is perhaps a sad commentary on my career, but all the same, it seems what is defining it. I don't want to get lost in the fact that there were a lot of complaints and a lot of concerns about Green Acres prior to the 2008 law changes. And in 2006, largely because of some of the anecdotal concerns legislators were hearing, the legislature required the Department of Revenue to do a report on Green Acres and on some of the administrative problems that Green Acres were experiencing, and some of the problems of Green Acres and what was preventing it from succeeding. In that report, we attempted to identify those issues, and we looked at a lot of the things that were causing Green Acres to not function as it was designed by the legislature, or at least as it was initiated in 1967. And as a part of our study, we found a wide array of how different counties were handling Green Acres. We found some counties had no Green Acres when they should. Other counties had Green Acres when they shouldn't have Green Acres. The market values weren't high enough to really reflect a need for Green Acres. There were assessors at the time who refused to implement Green Acres. They just treated it as an optional provision in the law that they chose to implement sometimes, and other times they chose not to. There were some counties that put all their land in Green Acres inappropriately and reduced the land values as a result. We had one county in particular that had sort of a de facto Green Acres provision where they didn't really have a Green Acres provision, but they had a unrealistically low value on their rural vacant lands, which in effect resulted in a Green Acres rural preserve type event. But this created a lot of problems for shifting taxes onto other property owners and resolved a lot of problems for us in the State Board of Equalization. There was one county and state that had an actual resolution prohibiting Green Acres within their county. We had some counties that said that every time property was on a lake, they put on Green Acres. I would argue that was probably appropriate. We had some counties that refused to put land on Green Acres, even though it was a budding lakeshore, and that raised a lot of concerns because it's pretty common practice from an assessment perspective that land abutting a lake has probably had an enhanced value. The income requirements for the Green Acres provisions were very, very low. It was the requirement was to have 10 acres per tillable acre and $300, and I think the legislature tried numerous times, most recently I think when Ron Abrams was tax chair, to raise the income limits, and it created so many problems because of how vast the state is and how different income levels would impact some parts of the state differently than others. So the legislature concluded that measuring Green Acres abilities by income based on rents or income on the land was probably not a good measure, and the legislative auditor concurred with that. Speaking of the legislative auditor, all the complaints and concerns that continued around Green Acres following our 2006 report, the legislative auditor was asked to complete a report on Green Acres, which they completed and reported to the legislature in 2008, which precipitated a lot of the legislative changes in response to the legislative auditor's report. The auditor's report raised a lot of policy concerns extending the benefits of Green Acres program to non-agricultural lands and resulting tax shift on other properties. They raised questions about the intent of the law, the actual original intent that was to equalize tax burdens upon agricultural property, and they questioned if that was actually happening as the way Green Acres was being administered. They concluded that the program, as it was functioning, did not do a good job of preserving farmland, as most people would argue is probably the intent of the legislation. And they also determined that 38% of the lands in the state that were enrolled in Green Acres were not used agriculturally, and that number was continuing to grow significantly. Something that kind of conspired about that same time to cause the farmland, the rural vacant lands that were qualifying for Green Acres to increase a lot was about 2000, 2001, about the time the stock market took a tumble, I believe is the correct term. That a lot of people were taking some of the values that the equity in their homes and money out of the stock market and reinvesting in recreational lands and rural vacant lands. And when they did that, it caused the competition for the farmers for the land that they were acquiring and trying to buy to farm on or to expand their farms. They were finding that they were competing with a lot of other economic factors, people buying land for recreation, hunting, all these other purposes that were driving up the cost of those, the cost of the farmers, the rural vacant lands. And consequently, more and more of these rural vacant lands were becoming eligible for the Green Acres program. Now, sort of a shift that occurred in about that time, starting probably in the 1990s or in going forward, in the old days, when I was assessing, when I first was a county assessor, it was pretty much a given that farmers bought land based on the tillable land. They paid the money for the tillable land. I had a lot of farmers at the time argue with me, honestly and legitimately, that we shouldn't even have a value on the rural vacant lands. That they didn't return money to them, consequently they didn't pay for them, consequently they didn't value them. This is going back quite a few years, but a lot of times in those days the farmers really felt the value of their land was in the productive lands, the tillable lands, and the rural vacant lands they were a much lesser value. So consequently the tillable lands always set the upper limit of value. The rural vacant lands were a much lesser value, and things worked well in the Green Acres the way it was organized at that time. When tillable lands, having the upper limit of value, when the value became higher than the tillable lands, it worked well to go into Green Acres, and you didn't have all the issues with all the rural vacant lands throughout the state also going to the Green Acres land. So things were changing. They were reflecting a lot of changes in the Green Acres law as it existed that were kind of making the wheels fall off. And another change that occurred before the recent Green Acres law changes was the limit to market value was set to expire beginning in 2005. The legislature set a phase out for the limit to market value, and the limit to market value expired. The last limit to market value was for 2008 assessment, taxes payable in 2009, with the result in any amount left over was rolled over onto the taxes paid in 2010. Now, as tax administrators, we certainly applaud the elimination of the expiration limit to market values law that was certainly created a lot of problems in that it shifted taxes from the really high valued, rapidly inflating properties onto the properties that were, in some cases, even declining in value or staying flat. So from an administrative perspective, limit to market value was not a good fix for Minnesota taxpayers, we didn't think. But when it was eliminated, it did result in some tax increases for a lot of properties. In 2008, the legislature, as a result of a lot of the changes recommended by the legislative auditor and some by the Department of Revenue, made a number of changes to the Green Acres law and totally revamped the law. And as I think often happens when you revamp a law significantly, there were a lot of the changes were good, and some created a lot of controversy, and some maybe were even questionable looking back how good they were. In 2009, as a response to a lot of public testimony and a lot of people were concerned about how the Green Acres law was functioning, the legislature made a number of changes to it, and they restructured a lot. They clarified some issues. They took some of the controversial issues out and moved on and came up with a what I believe is a much better means of implementing Green Acres. And just as things were beginning to calm down and people were starting to embrace the new Green Acres changes, the 2010 Truth in Taxation Statement started to come out, and everybody got up in the air and got all concerned again, and with good cause in some cases. There were some very large tax increases that would cause anybody to be very concerned. A number of these things, as Mr. Fultman talked about, were unrelated to the Green Acres changes. Some of them were one-time occurrences, and it was, as we keep calling it, the perfect storm. All these issues, many of them non-related, all combined to create this onslaught of tax increases for farmers at this particular point in time for the 2010 taxes payable in 2010. One of the issues that caused it is the ag market was very, very strong. You have to remember, when we determine the ag market for agricultural sales or all properties, we look at sales that occurred from October 2007 through September of 2008 for the 2009 assessment. So we're always looking at it historically, and there's always a lag in what was happening in the values. At that time, the farm economy was growing very strong. The farm values were increasing throughout the state. As a result of that, reacting to that, the average value that we prescribe to counties to use is in conjunction with valuing agricultural lands, a value that we came upon in 2007, increased 30%, which is a big increase in value. It, looking back, it looks particularly big in light of the fact of how the taxes increased. At the time, it didn't raise that many eyebrows because the ag economy was moving up so rapidly. Commodity prices, corn prices in particular, were going so high, and farmland was jumping rapidly in value. The one-time elimination of the limited market value that I mentioned also created a problem with the perfect storm. Another thing that you wouldn't even think about, it was sort of a good thing, was the tier break for agricultural property, where homestead agricultural property up to $1,010,000 in value of linked parcels gets the 0.50 class rate, and anything over that gets a 1% class rate. So the class rate doubles once it exceeds that. That seems like a real big number, and it is. Although when you start looking at the value of farmlands and how farmlands are inflated, sort of an unintended consequence was, even though that number is linked to sales, so it increases or decreases proportionally, there is that lag, and a lot of properties crossed over that tier. So it crossed over the $1,010,000 threshold. Once it crossed over that, the tax doubled on each of those parcels just by the class rate going from 0.50 to 1%. Another corresponding problem was, as ag values were increasing, the ag values stayed real strong and were increasing rapidly throughout most of the state. At the same time, residential and commercial values were going flat or in some cases declining. So you were experiencing a tax shift onto the agricultural properties. If all properties had been increasing at pretty much the same level, a lot of those tax burdens would have been borne more evenly. But because the ag values were increasing while other values were staying the same or declining, you had this shifting onto agricultural properties. And of course, there's been some levy increase at local governments as they try to pay for the services that their citizens require. It is critical to remember, and I think it's very, very important, a key component of all these events is, it's important to remember, as bad as some of them were for farmers, and I don't for a minute underestimate the impact of somebody's taxes going up 100% or 200%, what that does to your budgeting process. But it's critical to remember that none of these tax increases were the result of changes to the Green Acres Law in 2008 or 2009. They would have all occurred with or without the changes. So there were a lot of things that came together, the perfect storm, if you like, none of which had anything to do with Green Acres. Eric Ouellette will talk in a few minutes about some of these in greater depth, and he's got some excellent charts that he'll share with you. In the meantime, Andrea Fish, who is part of my staff, will continue with the presentation.
Mr. Hagan, and I don't know if it's part of your presentation, but to get to an actual agricultural value is very difficult in most parts of the state, because you have the recreational land, you have the urban sprawl, the development pressures, and so forth. So you go back to five base counties to get what you think is a true actual agricultural value. Is someone going to explain that process?
Ms. Fish will be talking about that. I'd be happy to answer questions.
No, that's fine. We can, if she's going to do that. So very good. If you would introduce yourself, and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Andrea Fish. As John Hagan said, I am also with the Department of Revenue Property Tax Division. My role here today is to introduce those who are unfamiliar with the Green Acres program, which shouldn't be anyone anymore, with a little background to the program. And sometimes it's good to look at where we came from when we're looking at where we are. This was, of course, enacted in 1967. The original language allowed for Green Acres value to be applied to specifically properties in the metro county, in the seven county metro area, that were experiencing non-agricultural influences on their properties. Qualifying property had to be a homestead used exclusively and intensively for agricultural use. Since 1967, of course, the program has morphed multiple times in multiple ways that we won't get into all of them. And some things haven't changed in that time. During the 1967 law, at the same time, agricultural land was defined as 10 contiguous acres used for agricultural purposes. So some things have stayed the same. Of course, a lot of things have changed. Specifically in 2008 and 2009, The changes that were made to Green Acres, as John Hagen touched on, involved some class changes. There was the redefinition of agricultural land for property tax classification and Green Acres qualification purposes, and there was the creation of the new Class 2B rural vacant land. It was also clarified as part of that 2008 legislation that all counties must implement the Green Acres value when their estimated market values exceeded the agricultural values for their counties. The other thing that happened was that income requirements were removed from Green Acres. It was, as John Hagen said, an antiquated number that was used, but this could potentially be more expansive. Again, the program continues to morph as we learn more about the agricultural markets. The class rate for agricultural homesteads was decreased from 0.55% to 0.50%. Both the redefined Class 2A agricultural land and the new Class 2B rural vacant land are eligible for agricultural homesteads. It's all one farm unit, and they both receive that reduced class rate on an agricultural homestead. And going forward, there's also, with the 2009 year, the Rural Preserve Program, which was enacted to address those 2B rural vacant lands that had been in Green Acres and that are part of an agricultural homestead going forward, does provide a similar tax benefit to properties not actually used for agricultural purposes. Some changes happened in 2008 that were taken care of right away in 2009, include a 7-year payback on those 2B properties that were enrolled in Green Acres. There is a, if you will, a get-out-of-jail-free card for those acres where they're allowed to be withdrawn for free or enrolled in the Rural Preserve Program without paying back the Green Acres deferred taxes. And there are some other options where those 2B acres can be transferred to children as well that were enacted last year to address some of the concerns that were brought up by members of the public. Not to oversimplify things, but this is what we use and what assessor's offices use to determine properties that qualify for agricultural homesteads. It looks complicated. I'd like to tell you it's not, but it is a little bit. Once you get into it, it can be pretty simple. It's like a Google Maps for agricultural homesteads. This wasn't greatly expanded in 2008 or 2009. There were some additional relatives added to qualifying relatives for agricultural relative homesteads, but this is, in fact, what we use to determine ag homesteads, and that is used for the class rate. That's used for Green Acres qualifications, and going forward, that will be used for Rural Preserve qualifications.
Thank you, Ms. Fish. And members, you do have this colored page in your report there, so I expect at the next meeting that you will thoroughly know that chart and be able to give a report. So please continue.
Mr. Chair, yes, that is an Appendix B of the report for those of you who are excited to get cracking on that. The Green Acres values, Mr. Chair, you did ask how we determine those values with respect to finding, if you will, true agricultural sales. There was a committee formed of assessors, Department of Revenue, and members of the Agricultural Committee in 2007 that using the data that we had available, searched to find a period of time where there were agricultural sales that had the least amount of non-agricultural influences, and an area of the state that had the most sales that were indicative, again, of that so-called true agricultural sale, which had the least non-agricultural influences. The committee explored multiple items, including rents, production income, sales themselves of agricultural land, to determine how these values for taxation purposes would be developed. It was determined that the southwest corner of the state, Lyon, Murray, Nobles, Pipestone, and Rock counties, were the most indicative of true agricultural sales, and we do refer to those as the base counties for agricultural purposes. However, there are 82 other counties in the state, as you are aware. Each individual county was compared in terms of sales to those counties for that same time period to determine what the relationship was and how those sales in each individual county could be compared to the true agricultural sales that were used in the base counties. And this relationship we refer to as a factor. And just as an example of one of the factors, if we go from the southwest corner all the way up to the northwest corner in Kitson County, Kitson County's relationship or factor is 30% for Green Acres purposes. So they're not using that base county number. They're using a factor of 30%. And we had a couple examples in the report. Benton County is one example we use as for the report. A lot of the counties, if you will look at Appendix A, you'll see that everything in that light yellow shaded color has a factor below 100%, and Benton County is one of those. They have a factor of 60%. So how that worked to determine that factor was during that time period that was used by the Green Acres Committee. The average sale price in Benton County was $641 per acre, while the average sale price in the Bays counties was $1,058 per acre, which led to that factor of 60%. And how that's used in the real world for the 2009 and 2010 assessments, if the Bays County average has been determined to be $4,000 per acre, that 60% factor is applied, and Benton County's Green Acres value per acre is $2,400. What this means is that if the average estimated market values on agricultural property in Benton exceed $2,400 per acre, the Green Acres value is applied. If the assessor determines that the estimated market values are less than $2,400 per acre, that Green Acres value is not applied and the actual estimated market value is used. And again, this just shows how this factor relates in today's world for the 2010 assessment. If you look statewide at the average sales price per acre on agricultural properties, it's $3,802. And it is true that in the southwest corner, those prices were higher for the 2010 assessment. That average was $4,287. But again, if we're applying that factor and looking at all the different counties that have a factor of less than 100%, the downward trend, because of the Green Acres value, had average Green Acres tilled values at $3,123 per acre. And just to get really right at the direct question, how were values for 2009 and 2010 determined? There was a lot of publicity about a 30% increase on that agricultural Green Acres value that was applied. And that was based on market activity and actual agricultural sales that occurred for that 2009 assessment period, that study that we did. And based on the market activity, the actual sales indicated an increase of 40%. Based on the professional judgment of the Department of Revenue in the assessment community, the actual increase applied was a 30% increase. For the 2010 assessment study period, the year started additionally stronger, so it looked like there might be another increase. However, towards the end of 2009, which is used for the 2010 assessment, there was indications of a softening in the agricultural market, particularly in the number of sales. And in the assessment community, that decrease in the number of sales is often indicative of values potentially decreasing. So for the 2010 assessment, values were held at the same value that we had used for the 2009 assessment.
Ms. Fish, then if I understand this right, from assessment 8 to assessment 9, payable 9 to 10, the increase was 30%. And what you're saying right now, based on your numbers, is that the payable between 10 and 11 will stay the same, as far as, I should say, that assessed amount will stay the same. There will not be an increase.
Mr. Chair, to address your question and kind of get at it better, I guess, yes, there was an increase for the 2009 assessment of 30%. For the 2010 assessment for taxes payable in 2011, the increase is 0% effectively for the Green Acres average value.
So, Ms. Fish, then, when we're talking about this perfect storm, there are calm waters ahead? Is that what you're saying for next year?
I hope so.
Okay. Thank you.
All indications would point to that. I do want to let the committee know that we are constantly in the process of evaluating these market trends and sales, not just in the Bays County, but in each individual county, because those factors that we have developed for that relationship are also subject to change. And we continue to look at the same criteria, whether it's rents or productivity, income, or differences in market, differences in non-agricultural influences, to make sure that we're using the right numbers continuously.
We have a question. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair, I'm still learning. But I'm kind of had understood that our values were always based on real sales, and I see here that the sales trend indicated 40%, but the department made a judgment to use 30%. You held back because you thought something might be going on. Has that ever been used in directions to assessors on any other type of property?
Ms. Fish or Mr. Hagen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, I'm not sure I totally grasp your question. I can tell you why we changed the 40% and softened it to 30%, where there's always some concerns at the Bays County, where, as Ms. Fish mentioned, there's a lot of concerns about various factors creeping into it, into the values that we use to predicate the proportional values for the rest of the state. And one thing we were concerned about, particularly in the southwest part of the state, was that there was a concern that some of the properties down there were beginning to be influenced by wind tower generations. The wind towers are sort of exploding down there, and the value that's subsequent to some of those purchases and lease amounts we thought might be having a factor. So if we wanted to err, we wanted to err on the side of basically the taxpayers and minimize the increase, so we wouldn't be in a position of overreacting and having to come back. With respect to how that applied to other properties, I'm sorry, but I didn't quite track that.
Representative Laughlin.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hagan, it may be just because this is such a unique program, it doesn't really apply to other types of properties because you have this base comparison. But it seems to me like there's no real base comparison that's ever static either. I mean, it might be the wind generators now, and it might be something else, some new crop that, you know, suddenly is the designer health food or I don't know what. And so, I mean, I just was intrigued by, you know, that we've always been told the assessor goes with comparable sales and that's it. And if you're unlucky to be in a hot market, you got to pay whether you're going to stay in your house or not. Or stay in your business or not, and this seemed to me really unusual from that perspective, that you're not just letting the market set the value. You're actually it says the department held back and applied, and I just wondered if the department has ever given that kind of direction on any other kind of assessment to not let the real actual sales, actual markets make the decisions, or if there are other wildly swinging markets in different types of properties that you've done that kind of interception before.
Mr. Hagan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Laughlin, and I apologize for not grasping earlier. That's an excellent question. In actual fact, the Green Acres market is very unique in that the reason we have gone to those base counties in southwest Minnesota is because it is impossible to find. We've heard University of Minnesota economists say 15 years ago that there were very few pure agricultural sales. Most of them were being influenced by other factors, recreational factors, things like that. So consequently, it is kind of a departure in the case of Green Acres from whatever the hot market concept or if things are selling fast. With respect to your question, we have varied in other issues, even on a market-driven properties that are, well, there is no deferment like Green Acres. We just recently made a determination with respect to some of the commercial industrial values in the metro area where the values were going along quite fast. They were increasing as they have been doing. And for so many years, we lived in this environment where there was an expectation that real estate values were increasing 10% or more a year. Ag land values were increasing 20, 25, 30%. Seasonal values were skyrocketing. And then commercial industrial values were increasing a lot. And then there were some economic factors that caused commercial values to just stop. The economy sort of hit the wall, and there were all these things that we're all familiar with and we're all too familiar with that caused the economy to just come to a screeching halt, and the retail market was suffering. A lot of commercial ventures were having problems, the unemployment, and it was a spiraling thing. As people lost their jobs, they quit buying goods, and on and on and on. It was just self-perpetuating. So we did, in a real good analogy, we actually looked at some of the sales activity on commercial industrial properties, and working with the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers, made a decision, a determination that we should actually back off the indicated value, which showed an increase. Again, keeping in mind we have that historical perspective in the 2000, you know, we're basically a year and a half behind, so we're looking at sales that occurred way beyond. So we actually used the rationale that the current market was very different than the historic market with respect to the commercial industrial sales, and we made a conscious effort to not follow that market because we had better knowledge of what was actually occurring in the market, even though our actual sales activity didn't reflect that. So it's not an exact science. We try to use a lot of good judgment and a lot of common sense in interpolating what we should do and what we shouldn't do. Historically, we wish we'd use more common sense, but it's not totally unprecedented.
This is great information and a very important topic, and I do want to say we've got Commissioner Ward Innes here, Revenue Commissioner. Thank you for being here today. And also, what I would like to do, and I don't know how much longer you have on the report, but we've got a number of folks, of course, that are here in attendance that are very interested in this, and I would like to leave at least 10 to 15 minutes for anyone or for those who would like to just talk generally about what you're hearing and concerns and so forth. And so we have three bills up, but I think we can get those three bills done easily in a half hour. So can we finish this up at about 1:45? Will we be able to finish the report? I know Mr. Ouellette still has to come and and I don't want to cut Ms. Fish off here if she's not completed, but I'm just trying to get a time frame. We don't always have meetings where we have a lot of interested folks, so this is great. I'd like them to be heard if they'd like to be.
Thank you.
So, well, thank you very much. Mr. Willett.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Willett. I'm with the Department of Revenue, and I'll go through several charts rather quickly in the interest of time, but if you do have clarifying questions, please ask me. All the information that's in the slides is also in the report that you've gotten with some more explaining text. So what you see here is just a 10-year trend of taxable market value change by major class. The square boxes that are mostly on the top is a seasonal rec property, and the ag classes are the red line. And what you can see is that at the very time that the ag market values have seen some of their biggest increases, all the other major classes of property have been in decline. As John indicated, this is somewhat based on historical data. We look at older sales to determine the values. So we do have indications that the ag market's softening. But for the assessment 09 that's used for taxes payable 10, you saw overall taxable market value increases for ag property of 18%.
Mr. Watt, just one second. What page is that
13.
On?
So
13. So everyone, I heard some people asking questions too. So
okay.
13 in the report, because that is a very revealing
and this
slide.
Is taxable market value, not estimated market value. So this is after the application of Green Acres and other deferments. One note on the 2009 factors, there was a significant amount of class shifting due to the new 2A, 2B definitions that were enacted. We tried to adjust for those in the 2009 numbers. So this is how much the same parcels changed in value for ag as opposed to how the class in total changed. There was some residential and seasonal rec property that has shifted into 2B because of the new definitions. So the total increase for the ag class is even more because there's more property in the ag class in 2009 than there was in previous years. But in terms of what the individual taxpayers are seeing, the average was about 18%.
Very good. Representative Rockwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Walt, just to that very specific point, I don't think anyone disputes the perfect storm aspects of this matter. But just to be clear, the changes in the Green Acres law did increase people's taxes. I don't dispute the other things, but just for people to be aware, the changes did raise their taxes, correct? For those people who were in the program before.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, the changes to the Green Acres law that were enacted by the legislature didn't impact the taxes. The change in the methodology we use to determine what the Green Acres value is, that thing that Andrea went through where we used the base county, it was those sales and that 33% increase that caused all the Green Acres parcels to see a 33 or more percent increase in their taxable value. So that methodology we had established prior to the 2008 law changes.
Representative Garofalo.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, my apologies. I don't want to take us too far down into the weeds here. And I've learned far more about this program than I actually prefer to care to. But I'm having a difficult time understanding that how by changing a property value, a property's classification in the changes of this program did not. I understand the methodology change, but I guess this is one of those instances where the lessons I learned on the playground when I was a kid apply best to the legislature, and that is you don't change the rules in the middle of the game. And we change the rules on people. We change the rules on people in the middle of the game, and there's no doubt that external factors totally unrelated to that really hit some people hard, but the changes we did make that people had made investment decisions on, planning decisions, were altered by the legislature in the middle of the game. And I want to make sure that is my point of view. If I'm not correct, I'd like to be corrected. So
yeah,
I think this is
a very, Representative Rothwell, very, very good question. And while the format changed, you know, of course, with rural preserve and so forth, again, has the changes made in 08 or 09 impacted the increase on the property taxes? I think we need to answer that because you can move from like the area now that would be considered real vacant, the 2B, that
you don't lose that benefit if you do something. So there wouldn't be any changes there. I mean, you have that option. I mean, it's different than the way it was, but right now there shouldn't be an impact, if that's my understanding. But this is a crucial question. So,
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, I'll give it a try, and John can jump in. The many properties change classes, but as far as we can tell, the class rates in those new classes match the class rates they had prior. So there were no class rate changes to any significant degree. And the change to rural vacant land may impact property owners, but they haven't yet because of the grandfathering and because the program is still getting underway. So all the tax increases for calendar year 2010 are not directly related to the 2008 and 2009 Green Acres changes.
And if I might say, if in those five base counties from assessment 08 to 09, if those sales had been exactly the same as the year before, you would not see that 30% increase in the assessed value. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, I should also note that it wasn't limited just to the southwest part of the county. The whole state was experiencing big increases in agricultural values at that time, which is since slowing, I believe, but at that time. And to tag on to Mr. Ouellette said, Representative Garofalo, I agree that there were some changes made to the rules, what qualified and what did not qualify for Green Acres. But none of those changes have had an effect on the taxes in 2009 or 2010. As Mr. Ouellette mentioned, there is a potential if they do not enroll in Green Acres, and the valuation will be based on the market value instead of the deferred value for taxes payable year 2013 and 2014, there will be an increase, so there will be an effect on their property taxes. But up until now, there has been none related to Green Acres.
Representative Detmer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned that there was the average increase of 30%. Well, I've got some tax statements right here of a farmer that just stopped in my office, and five parcels, 114%, 155%, 173%, 420%, and 72%. So
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, I believe what you're referring to is tax increases, and that's the perfect storm analogy. Yeah. The 30% refers to the valuation increase, which played a part in that perfect storm. I will concede that. Yeah. But it was a elimination of limited market value. It was the other properties decreasing in value or staying flat, while agricultural properties increased and causing a corresponding shift. So there was certainly was a tax increase that may well, in many cases, did exceed the 30%. But that's the perfect storm, not the 30%.
Yeah. Okay. And the limited market value might have had a lot to do with that. And that actually started to be phased out back in, looks like, 2002. I mean, so that wasn't something that was even recent. And in fact, for a few times, we extended the limited market value. It was going to end by about 2006 or 7, and we actually extended it a couple years, I know, at least on one occasion. So, and you know, and Representative Detmer and Representative Garofalo, this is, I mean, those are excellent questions. And that's why I thought it was so important to hold this meeting. It was just, the report got done, but quite frankly, there's a perfect storm this year that tended to coincide with the changes, or the time we made the changes to Green Acres, and it is just normal to say, hey, somehow this should be related. It's just common sense to think that, and otherwise it's counterintuitive. But without the increase in the strong ag market and the sales, that would have helped a lot of it, because you would have had that 30% increase in market values. And if limited market value was still on, that would have made a big difference again, and you probably would not be seeing a lot of property tax increases. Now, there might be specific cases where maybe at one time it was under Green Acres and now it's not considered ag land, or I don't know. That could be a specific case, you know. But I think it's really important, because especially as we kind of look moving forward on these, that we know for sure just exactly what's causing all of these things, because it seems to be somewhat cyclical. And another big factor is the fact that ag land is the only one really going up in value, and the other ones are sinking a little bit, which even shifts more taxes on the ag land. But one thing back in 08 that seemed to get overshadowed by the Green Acres changes
we made, and I'm glad we came back and changed the 08. I mean, we had, and I was part of that, and we ended up making those changes, and some of those changes were not good. And we heard loud and clear, and we really tried to address those last year. Prior to that, where was I going with that? There was some one other point. Oh, in that change of 08 and 09, we did lower the classification rate from 0.55 down to 0.50, which on homestead land would lower property tax about 9% on that first tier. And another change that was made about 06 or 07, maybe 06, was where that first tier value would go inflated with the market values. So at one point, it was like the first tier of was like at 600,000. And now, as you heard, it's up over $1 million. So we have tried to do some things that have tried to keep property taxes down for the ag lands. And that's why we're having this meeting today also. So anything else? Because I'd like to get to comments, if we could, Mr. Ouellette.
There's a lot of information in the report to Mr. To Representative Dittmer's point. The averages mask some distribution. There are some really big increases even on the value side. There's a table here that's in the report that shows that there are a lot of parcels, 25,000 parcels that had taxable market value increases over 50%. So the 33% was what was typical for Green Acres, but there were some that were higher, especially those that are not in Green Acres. Remember that only about 13% of ag parcels are in Green Acres, the bulk of what's going on with ag taxes is not Green Acres, it's the market and the elimination of limited market value. Two really quick things and then I'll be done. This shows Green Acres, the 50,000 Green Acres parcels value in aggregate in 2008 and 2009. The light blue at the bottom is their how much value they're being taxed on, and I'm not sure what page this is on, but it is in the report. And the white value above is what's deferred because of Green Acres. So that's the amount of estimated market value that is not taxed due to Green Acres. The little blue box in the middle was the value of the limitation of limited market value. So that blue box went away. The Green Acres value went up, and that resulted in an average value, taxable value increase of 18%. The estimated market value on these Green Acres parcels actually went down. The non-ag influences go down when the development pressures are soft because of the market, so that deferment shrunk significantly. But there is still a 38% deferment of value on Green Acres parcels. So 38% of the value is not taxed. The other 350,000 ag parcels, there is no Green Acres deferment, so most of it is taxable, but they also lost that dark blue limited market value benefit. And in both of these charts, the elimination of limited market value didn't only eliminate that dark blue, but it also lifted the cap on how much the values could increase for either the Green Acres value increasing or, in the case of non-Green Acres, the estimated value. So they lost the value they had, and they lost the ability to tamp down on the increases that happened in 2010. So limited market value elimination had really two impacts there. There's a lot more information in the report on, there's an example of how the tier break that Andrew mentioned could result in some of those 100% increases on a particular parcel, but I won't go into detail there, but anyone has any questions, they can contact us.
Thank you very much. I have Representative Dietrich and then Representative Lanning. I do want to get, how many would like to make some comments? I know you've traveled a long ways, so if I can just get, how many would like to, we've got one, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. Anyone else? Because that can kind of guide a little bit how much time. Very good. All right. Representative Dietrich.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This comment is really more for you. Is when we talk about this perfect storm in property tax valuation and property taxes due, another piece of this that I, as a member of this committee, would like some clarification on and a little paid a little bit of attention and time to is the increase in fiscal disparities. We have heard through some of our small business forums that the fiscal disparities tax has gone up quite a bit, and our farmers are small businesses also, and I would just be very interested to know how those two things intersect, if they do. I don't want to hijack this conversation today, but I'd just like to put that placeholder on our agenda for the future, if
very
we can
good.
Look into that.
Thank you very much. Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, when we go through an experience like this, I like to ask the question, what were the lessons learned? And it seems to me that a possible lesson learned here is that the property tax system can only handle so much change at one time without creating perfect storms or whatever. When you have a change in limited market value, change in market conditions, change in green acres, and whatever else, maybe we just had too many factors that were moving or changing at the same time. And maybe we ought to keep that in mind as we go forward and try to deal with the property tax policy going forward. I'm not expecting a comment, but that's...
Thank you very much. Anyone want to talk about lessons learned here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, you may have been in on some of the conversations Mr. Fulton and myself had. We learned a lot of lessons. There are so many changes. Mr. Fulton beat himself up, and myself by extension, figuratively speaking, over what were we thinking of when we allowed ag values to increase 30%, knowing limited market value was coming off, some of these other issues. The correct appraisal response is, well, the market was there. If we didn't react to it, we'd have to deal with it later. And what you can always find justifications and rationales. I think it's been a good learning experience, and not necessarily good in the sense of how we enjoyed it, but I think your admonition is well taken in there. We always have to be cognizant of all the factors in play, and when there's too many moving parts, something's going to break. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Department of Revenue, for your report. So, at this time, gentlemen, if you would come forward, there's a couple chairs, and we'll just start up here the front. That I think a couple wanted to speak, and two come up, and then as one leaves, the other one. And I think we have about four speakers. We'll go till about five after, so 2-3 minutes person, if that would be okay. And just state your name and please proceed and welcome. I appreciate you being here today.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee here, thank you very much. My name is Fran Miron. I'm a dairy and crop farmer from Washington County and a member of Farm Bureau and here as part of the Farm Bureau group today. I appreciate you taking time to hear a few comments. The tax statements that Representative Detmer referred to were tax statements that I gave him from our own property. And if you have a chance to look at those, there's, the tax rate increases that were talked about from the mid 70% to 420%. If you look at the land values have gone up in multiples, 3, 4, 5 times the value. So obviously some of that is related to taxable or to limited market value, but a good share of it is related to the increases in value because of the formula that the Department of Revenue is now using. And I want to make a couple comments with respect to that formula because I believe it is somewhat flawed. There seems to be, and I don't believe it's a coincidence, that investment portfolios were dropping at a time when ag land values were increasing. People were diverting money from portfolio investments into land, and that, I believe, has had an influence on the ag land values. Okay, we're not going to see significant changes probably now because those people are going to hold on to that investment for some time. But I believe that is part of the reason that land values went up, along with the fact that the farm economy was doing well at that time and land appeared to be a good investment or a good alternative investment to what many people were investing in prior to. And, land rents, all of those things come into play on that particular issue. And I know there's some bills that are coming up before the committee here later today that talks about changing how that value is done and basing it more on land rents, productivity of land, and those types of things. And I believe that it's those things that caused our land values to increase significantly. And there are significant differences between values in southwestern Minnesota and the type of land and the farmability of that land in the growing season compared to what we experience. And I believe that difference is much more accentuated than what the Department of Revenue is calculating as a percentage of that base value. Okay. We're farming 10-acre parcels, 20-acre parcels with rocks, fieldstone, and that type of thing, and fertility, the depth of topsoil, all of those things are so much different. We've got wetlands we're dealing with. We've got wooded lands we're dealing with and farming around. The farmability of the land is significantly different than that in southwestern Minnesota. The other thing that I think flaws the Department of Revenue's analysis is the 1031 exchanges that were going on during that period of time. Land values had because of the housing market and other impacts, had caused land values within the seven county metro area and many of these green acre land values to go up significantly. Farmers were, in many cases, selling those marginal pieces of farmland within the seven county metro area for development and doing 1031 exchanges and competing with farmers in southwestern Minnesota on those land values, driving land values up. I think it was driving land values up beyond the productive capacity of some of those lands down in southwestern Minnesota. So for at least those two reasons, I believe the Department of Revenue's analysis on the value of farmland in southwestern Minnesota is flawed. And I'd ask the committee to consider that. As we talk about the perfect storm, Mr. Chairman, you alluded to the fact that these land values will now level off. And I can accept that, and I believe that that's going to be the case, that these land values that have now risen will level off. But the impacts of that are going to continue on and are going to be accentuated, because I can tell you, as a mayor of a city, and I happen to be the mayor of the city of Hugo, 80% of the actually close to 85% of the residential values within our community are decreasing. Significant increases are being seen in ag land values. Tax rates are going to be very, very difficult in the next few years to hold level or to hold down. We are going to see increases in tax rates, and I suggest that the counties will also see increases in tax rates because of shift in burden for providing services and that type of thing to the county levels. So both at the county and the local level, we will see tax rate increases, and that tax rate increase will now be on a much higher value of on the ag land. Sure. And so we are going to continue to see significant tax increases on farmland way beyond their productive carrying capacity because of those factors.
Thank you very much. So, thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman. My name is Craig Moline. I am a farmer in Chisago County, just straight north of here in the area of North Branch. We hear all day here in the House and the Senate of a perfect storm. Sorry, there's no perfect storm. This is like a hurricane out of control. This has nothing to do with our land values in east central Minnesota of what the state averaged in those five counties. It costs me just as much dollars per acre of a county average in my county, let's say of 115 bushel average, as the same as it does to insure a crop in southwestern Minnesota of a 200 bushel average. There's a reason why land values down there are more, or a reason that they can grow that type of a crop. We're in this frost area. That's why it costs us more to insure that crop. Now, we're getting taxed plenty on our agricultural land, that my farmland is only 49% farmable. You take this green acres away from me, what do I do with my 51%? I have to stick it away for 10 years. It's not profitable. It's still profitable. There's things that we can do with that, but I am very limited on government control of what I want to do with my land. So that I'm not for this rural preserve at all. The green acres that was set up was a good thing. There's a reason why it was working so well for so long. To me, it's a fundraising tactic of trying to get some money if you don't want to put your land aside, because I am punished if I don't put it in a 10-year program. And to me, that's just more government control. I apply with the soil and water people in my county. I apply with the DNR. There are programs out there for plant trees, protect my water. Now I'm going to take land that is trees, and I have to make it productive. So that means I would take high ground in the woods which the DNR or the Soil and Water like me to do, and try to make it green acres productive. So we're going to pull land out that we don't want to pull out, but I don't have many choices. You know, our area is a much different than southwestern Minnesota. That's not a good, statewide average is nothing to go by here. It should strictly be by county. The state has nothing to do with my county at all. Our producing of our food, our corn crop out of these gentlemen behind me, and it won't be me by the year 2050, it'll be my kids, maybe, if we can hang on to this land. We need to double our corn production by the year 2050. That's only 40 years away. If we end up taking land aside and not getting these tax breaks that we need to apply to our property, it's not going to happen. We're not worried about food today. It's in the grocery store. You can always buy it. Someday it might not be there. What are we going to do? The world revolves around this state. Agriculture is what? Our number one product. It still is and still can be. But if you're going to push us off and we can't afford to farm today, there's no future for my kids or the next generation. So I would like to say that there's nothing wrong with the program the way it was, but the land preserve and what you're approaching doesn't apply to all of us. You know, they don't have that wasteland, or we call non-productive, in southwestern Minnesota or northwestern Minnesota. It doesn't affect those counties. I'm sure you don't have those counties even here. It affects us, though, in a corridor north of the cities over to St. Cloud. It affects us greatly. And you know what? That's an inflated land sale price that the state's come up with. That was in 08 and 09. You guys realize what the price of corn and beans were in 08 and 09? $6, $7. We've never seen that in our life. I don't know if we'll see that again. But that's what these averages went off of. 1 year. Mm-hmm. That has nothing to do with what's happened today. Corn today is $3.25. Mm-hmm. Beans are $8. You know, you can't just compile your information on 1 year and then create it into this puzzle. It's just not going
to
work.
Mr. Molina, I appreciate those comments very much. Thank you much.
Thank you.
We are going to go to the bills, and then at the end we'll come back if there's anyone else, but we need to get the bills done, and it's five after. So at this time, we're going to hear House File 3161 and House File 3373, Representative Jackson and Representative Eastland. Why don't we do both of them at the same time, because we're really dealing right now with a date change. And so Representative Jackson, please proceed and welcome. And we need someone to move for bill for possible inclusion. Representative Conan moves House File 3161 for possible inclusion into the division report. And let's also move Representative Eastland's. We're moving bill 3373 for possible inclusion. Representative Lanning will move that bill. So, okay. Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. I am today with Mr. Stephen Kuha, Office of the County Assessor, Cass County. I won't have him testify unless there are questions, because we can keep this brief. And the bill is simply a date change. As you all recall, one of the few kind things that we were able to accomplish was to give people whose land ceased to qualify for green acres after May 28, 2008, an opportunity to get out of the program penalty-free. And the deadline for that was May 1, 2010, and that's approaching fast. By moving it back to my proposed date of August 16, 2010, it gives folks most of the summer, about 3.5 more months. And it also, it doesn't create additional headaches administratively for the county assessors or the Department of Revenue.
Thank you very much. Representative Eastland, anything you would like to add? Or I know your bill is a little different, but I mean, there's a few things in there if you...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for just being able to present the bill. I know we had some discussion about what was appropriate, what wasn't here, and I had some other comments I'd like to make on the other issue there, but we'll let that happen with the other. I will make one comment. I passed around some of the tax statements that were in front of you. One of them was from my constituent. Actually, he's the guy that farms my land at home. And if you see, his name is Robert Olson, and you see on the sheet there. And I guess I don't think the argument is, in my mind, is the value of farmland. I think if farmland is worth more, it's worth more. I don't think we can argue that, and we can argue the five-county method or some other method. But I think what I think is the key issue here is I don't think anybody deserves to have a 30, 40, 50, 100%, 200% property tax increase in 1 year. And I think that's something that we really need to address in this legislature. So that's just a comment on the things that have happened before. We can talk about the perfect storm, but we need to do what we can do to mitigate that storm so it doesn't have to have the kind of effect that it's having on our local farmers. We're going to hear a bill that's going to do that. I think Representative Olin's bill, I have a bill very similar to that that I think actually addresses the increase from this year, and I would appreciate a chance to hear that as well. But this bill that we're talking about is House Bill 3373, and my approach is a little bit different because I guess I am a farmer. I understand the nature of a lot of farmers, and deadlines are very difficult to meet sometimes, especially when you don't understand all the details of what you're doing. And there's clearly a lot of confusion about what this deadline is for, what the options that exist are, and people are asking me, calling me, and they're concerned that they don't know what they should be doing, and they don't know what this deadline is going to mean and how it's going to affect them. And the deadline needs to be moved so we can at least create a little bit bigger window of time. But what I do in my bill is I move the deadline to a similar date, August 15th, 1 day difference. But what I also do is I allow for the fact that human nature is at work here, and not everybody's going to get it done by August 15th. And so I simply say that while you can go to August 15th of the next year and you can use that as your deadline, but you use some of the forgiveness of back taxes. You lose one of the years. And if you don't want to make it by that date, but you decide before the final deadline of 2013 that you want to still get involved in this program, you could actually do it in 2012 by August 15th, and you would just lose 2 years. And so you would still get 1 year forgiven. So it's a way to kind of ratchet the penalty a little bit and give the best benefit to the people that act quickly, but not take away and pull the rug out from everybody. And it seems like a more reasonable approach.
Any questions from any of the members? Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that it's really hard to see these kind of increases. And I understand how you have to respond to your constituents. But I have to say, as a city person, I'm really just kind of surprised at the numbers, and that shows some of the disparities in our city, because I just took the Washington County statement that you shared us for the Marin family, and their total taxes on all these parcels are $1,944, with dramatic increases, without a doubt. But they own a total of 185 acres in Washington County, and a house across the street from me is owned by a young couple. They bought it in 2006 for $233,000. It's now valued at $182,500. It's a 40 by 126 foot lot. The house on it is less than 1,000 square feet, and they are paying $2,458 per year, over $200 a month, and they have no income coming off of that property. And so I have empathy, but I hope that you'll also understand, as we deal with the issues that split our state, when we talk about property tax burdens, I just didn't realize that anyone could have that much property and pay relatively, comparatively, so much less than my constituents who live very, very modest lifestyles.
Could I comment on it?
Or Representative Eastland or Representative Jackson, were you want to weigh in on
Mr. Chair, and Representative Loeffler, I agree, and I said that initially, I said that this isn't about whether property or value should be increased or decreased, but I would also remind you that there's no improvements on those lands. There is no house. This landowner also owns a house someplace and pays a comparable tax to those that your neighbor pays. Those are bare, vacant lands that are basically farm and tillable lands, I think is my understanding.
Mr. Chair, it says it's
Representative Loeffler.
It says it's an egg homestead, so I assume that there was a house there.
Egg homestead is everything that's included in the
Eastland value. Very good, yeah. Very good. Representative Jackson.
Thank you. One of the things that I like to avoid at all times is a push-pull between rural and metro. I represent a rural area. Our problems are very, very unique, And I don't want, I hesitate to get into an apples-oranges discussion when I think the real problem has been articulated so well by Representative Eastland, that I know that there were areas where the valuation was done incorrectly and could arguably have even been too low. The problem is these farmers are business people who are trying to anticipate their costs. And I have had a lot of my constituents come in, some of the folks from Sherburne County who are here today, and from Benton, Morrison, and Mille Lacs, with 200, 300, 400% increases all at once. And anything that we can do to mitigate that storm, we need to.
Representative Jackson, Representative Eastland, you both have talked to me on almost a daily basis on these issues, and I appreciate that very much. You're doing very, very good work for your constituents on this issue. But any further questions? Any comments from the audience for or against the bills? Yes, sir. And if you could, you're still going to comment. I'll give you some time. Nope, you can just come right up here, right up here. But if you could just be specific to the bill, please.
Just if I may.
You can have his seat. So go ahead and take a seat, and please state your name.
Mr. Chairman, Fran Miron, I was here a minute ago, dairy farmer from Washington County. Those tax statements are my own. We actually own 280 acres. We farm a little over 700 acres, but that does not include the building site with all of the improvements. That are just some of the examples of the land values that went up on the bare land. Our building site went up also when residential properties have seen a downturn. Our farm residential site has gone up in value, but not as significant. I believe the increase on the farm, on the parcel with the buildings, was about a 30% increase. So we're still seeing increases on those, but I gave you just the bare land portions of our properties.
Thank you. That's helpful. It just said homestead, so I assumed that there was a house there.
And Mr. Chairman, all of the land is homesteaded because it's all contiguous and part of our farm. But that is just the bare land. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any final words, Representative Jackson, Representative Eastland?
No, I just would ask for passage of this bill. I think both Representative Eastland and I have been responding as best we can. This is only a start. He and I both have many more bills that can certainly help mitigate the storm a lot more, and I hope we have an opportunity to have those heard.
Representative Eastland.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate hearing the bill, and I echo the same sentiment. This is an issue, and this is one small piece. But going forward, there's a number of other issues that need to be addressed, I think, if we're going to make this work in a way that's equitable for the people that have been most affected.
Very good. Thank you very much. We have Mr. Raddatz here.
Mr. Chairman. Very briefly, for the record, my name is Chris Raddatz with Minnesota Farm Bureau. And for the record, just so the committee knows, both Farm Bureau and Farmers Union, Mr. Peterson's in the office or in the audience, support the extension of the deadline.
Very good. Thank you very much. So Representative Coonan renews his motion on House File 3161, and Representative Lanning renews the motion on 3373 to include this have this for possible inclusion into the division report. Thank you very much. We are now going to we're going to move to House File 3372, and we have Representative Olin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
Thank you, and I'm going to have someone move it. Representative Loeffler will move House File 3372 for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Olin. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and committee, I'm not going to belabor all sorts of new tax statements, etc. I'm going to give the points as I see them without them bringing in a whole bunch of new formulas. What this bill specifically addresses is the limited market value situation that happened in rural Minnesota last year. Many farmers, and not just a couple of them, suffered anywhere from 30 to 100% increases because the sunset happened on the limited market value. In doing so, we created a situation not only in northern Minnesota, but I can speak for that area shortly, where a lot of farms were endangered as to whether they could actually exist anymore because of all of a sudden a big increase in 1 year on their ag, on their taxes. I had a couple of dairy farmers up in northern northwest Minnesota, my district, tell me that based on what just happened, we can't imagine how we're going to be able to even bother to stay in business next year because we don't make the money to pay these taxes. This is not, this is a real situation, folks. And what this, what the bill I've got in front of me does, I'm not even attempting to undo the tax statements of this year because I don't know that you could even try to do that because they're out there already being paid. And I realize a lot of people would love me to do that. What I'm trying to do is change the limited market value and put it back into effect following this year. In other words, next year we'll drop back down to 2008 values and then we'll proceed on a 20% for 1 year and a 15% on years thereafter, and it's kind of self-explanatory on the bill. The second part of my bill, and I do need to have an amendment added to the second part, as I understand.
Barry, let's do that right now, Representative Owen. Representative Kunin moves the A2 amendment, and would Mr. Hines or Ms. Baker, could you describe what's happening here?
Mr. Chairman, the A2 amendment was the second section of the bill is aimed to make the bill revenue neutral by trimming the property tax targeting program, and the bill as originally drafted was not, did not quite fulfill that goal of revenue neutrality, so there's some further adjustments made to targeting in the amendment to make the thing be fiscally balanced.
Okay. If you remember, members, one of the criteria to bring a bill forward is it cannot add to the budget deficit, so that was...
Right. The original bill in the form that I would have brought it would have been just the ag values, limited market values, and nothing else, and I understand that the state would have lost around $3 million, roughly, by doing so. This targeted part that is being added under this, and this amendment and second provision of this bill is to address that loss, so there isn't any loss to the state, as I understand.
And the loss is the fact that this would shift higher property taxes onto others. There would be a property tax refund expense for those people who would have extra property taxes. So I'm going to take a vote on this. If there's no further discussion on the A2 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Anything further there, Representative Owen?
Essentially, that's what the bill does, and I know you're short of time, and I could have, like I said, come up with a whole bunch of appraisals, et cetera, but I didn't see that that was going to do anything in your schedule, so I have not chosen to do so, and I'll rest on the comments I made, but basically I'm trying to straighten out a disaster that happened in a lot of rural areas last year.
Representative Owen, thank you. Members, any questions for Representative Owen? Not any members of the audience would like to testify for or against. We'll have audience members. We're not going to have other representatives at this time do that. So if you would please come forward. And please state your name and welcome.
Thank you. My name is Mary Gillette, and I am from Sherburne County, and I am a farmer, and I would like to continue farming in Minnesota. But the impact of the changes from the Green Acres and all the other perfect storm measures that are do directly impact and have impacted us, we have a tax increase of 600%. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many businesses can continue to go on in that way. So for the future of agriculture in Minnesota, this really needs to, the deadlines were very difficult to meet. And so I speak in favor of all these amendments.
Ms. Gillette, thank you very much. Anyone else care to speak for or against the amendment? Yes, sir. Please come forward.
Amendment or?
I'm sorry, on this bill. On just this bill. I think we'll have some time for some other comments. But on this bill, on the limited market value right now. Anyone else? Not members? We do have comments. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Steve Kuha. I'm the Cass County Assessor from
Walker, Minnesota, and I'm here to represent the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. And just a couple comments regarding this bill. We don't oppose the intent of what's being attempted here. However, we want to remind you that limited market value in the late 70s, we went through it. It went away. We've been working on the difficulties over the past 8 to 10 years, and the phase-out has taken place. There's been numerous reports and studies conducted over the past half dozen years regarding limited market value. It really, in our opinion, isn't a good policy issue that we should be considering. The other alternatives that may be available would refer to maybe class rate reductions for these property owners, property tax refunds, targeting programs, any kind of circuit breaker effect. There's other ways to give tax relief, we believe, to the folks that are involved with this and being harmed, if we can use that term. But limited market value simply is one of those tools that I think has been, it's run its course and has been found to be not the most efficient tool in the toolbox. So just wanted to go on record from the association on that matter.
Thank you very much. Closing remarks, Representative Olin.
Well, I attended. There is something we said for maybe not the best tool, but at this particular stage in the careers of these farmers up north and in the rest of the state, I think limited market value is what hit them last year, and they would want to see a correction right now immediately on what happened last year, and that's why I have this specific bill, realizing 1 year has already been lost and I need to protect the farmers of greater Minnesota in general. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Walker renews her motion to move House File 3372 as amended for possible inclusion into the division report. Thank you much. That clock is a little fast, actually. I've got 23 after, so we got 7 minutes. So how many would like to respond just to anything or talk about anything today? Let's see. We've got one. And there's a gentleman in the back, I thought, earlier, maybe. Okay. One, two? Is that one, two? Okay. Then with 7 minutes, you're going to have 3.5 minutes apiece. So if the gentleman would come forward. And again, I appreciate everyone being here today. So please state your name. And
all right. Good afternoon. My name is Glenn Holmstrom. I farm in Chisauga and Isani counties. And the property tax increases we experienced this year were from 60 to 157%. And I think part of it is explained by the 30% increase, obviously, that they came up with on the formula. But a large portion of my increases stem from the fact that the first tier of property taxation at 0.50, mm-hmm. and then after that goes to 1%, 1.1 million does not go far any longer in when you're owning farmland and farming for a living. It also, I don't think that was reflected in the increase up to that 1.1 million from the 600,000 because of the limited market value when we lost that. It increased rapidly. I farm with my brother and my son, and we have 3 century farms that we're holding on to. And so right there is 580 acres that we've owned since 1880s on all three of them, some point in time, late 1800s. So this is, you know, we'd like to see some kind of help in that area, that maybe raising that tier one up a little would sure help a lot. Because that's a doubling of taxes as soon as you get over that that about 300 acres worth. Thank you.
Mr. Holmstrom, thank you very much. Sir?
Hello. Thank you. I'm David Thompson, Elk River, Minnesota, Sherburne County. And I own 40 acres of land, and my taxes jumped up about $1,900 from this change. They talk about a perfect storm, and I heard you guys say that in the Department of Revenue. You guys realize that in a perfect storm, everyone died in the end of that thing? The good guys died.
Where's George Clooney?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. And that's what you did to a lot of landowners. In dollar values, what happened to me, or what my hourly job, $2.50 out of My wages, every hour, 40-hour week, pays my property taxes. My 2.5 years' time pays for the what I purchased my land for originally. Every 2.5 years, I paid for my property again. 10 years, it's $50,000. I'm lucky. I still got a job. I'm working. I can. My wife and I will make it work. We have to. The programs that are involved, I lose. I don't get the green acres. I don't get the agricultural. I own 40 acres, 18 acres of high ground, 22 acres of swamp. I can't grow a crop on it. I can't put a fence around it because the cow will sink in the swamp. So it's not good for pasture. I lose by getting sign up for your programs, and then I end up with someone else telling me what to do. I bought it. I wanted to own it. I wanted my say in it. I don't want to sign up for the program. I guess I would like to see some better arrangements done. The program said it was a 30% change. My taxes went up about 60%. So I would just, whatever we can do to help alleviate these, a friend of mine with a fixed income, he says, I don't know, I might have to move to Arizona with my sister because he can't afford his property in Sherbourne County. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Mr. Thompson, thank you and everyone who testified. And there's no doubt that this is probably the number one property tax issue we're hearing this year, especially, is this huge increase on agricultural property taxes. And there's no easy solutions, and much of it now is after the fact, kind of. So, you know, moving forward, how can we deal with this? But again, thank you so much for everyone for being here. Comments, at the division, we're going to be working on things. I don't know what we can do for sure, but appreciate hearing your comments, and they will certainly be taken into consideration. And with that, we are adjourned.